Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face. We are an irreverent podcast about news and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
And this is episode 210 on this fine, established podcast based on morals and good standards. We've got four albums. That's right. We've got four albums that we're going to review this fine week. We got Still Over It by Summer Walker. We got Drones by Terrace Martin. We got 2.5 by Amine. Nice little drop. And then we got Young Kid Amnesia by Radiohead.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a while. And yeah.
We don't usually do four albums on the podcast because it breaks our brain. but like, it's really hard to, like, eventually the music sort of just blurs in together. Mm-hmm. But we will make exceptions for a special Radiohead release featuring some new unreleased tracks or previously unheard tracks that we'll be saving for the rest of the episode. We've got a lot of news as well. News is spread out throughout the episode. It's a nice chunky audio face. But let's get right into it the way we always do with new singles.
Yep, we have New Shapes by Charlie XCX featuring Christine and the Queens and Caroline Polachek. So Charlie XCX announced that she's going to release a new album or making a new album. I don't know when. Do you know when it will be released?
Early next year. We're starting to get around that time where the 2022 albums are starting to get announced. We got an announcement for Earth Gang, but like that Earth Gang project's been announced for a long period of time. But
yes, it's true.
2022, like the thing about when you're announcing a project in late 2021, saying it could come out in 2022, that's a lot of runway you're giving yourself. So
yes, let's take 5 days.
But anyways, back to Charlie XCX. There should be a new album coming out soon. This, along with Good Ones, which we didn't talk about before. It has come out already, but we didn't talk about it before on Audio Face, so it doesn't break the singles rule. Seem to be our little sort of like inclination, our understanding of what we'll get from Charlie XCX in the newest project. When the lights and the skates are a call, so surrender to it all night. Then we fall in love in new shapes, new shapes. When the morning comes all misty, we fade, 'cause we fell in love in new shapes, new shapes. So what you want? And it seems to be kind of a continuation of her like pop throwbacks kind of thing.
Yes, synth 80s pop is what I would say. Lots of like 80s synth sound, pretty like standard pop, everything in there. But it's a decent track nonetheless. It's nothing offensive, nothing brilliant or whatnot. So, but it's good. I mean, we liked her two previous records that we talked about, we reviewed on the podcast. This track I was kind of a little underwhelmed with, but again, I'll get the full context when we get the whole album. But it's a decent pop song, nonetheless.
Yeah, it has those like echoey 80s drums in the background that make it feel like a Rick Astley track in the best ways possible. It sounds really interesting. Not like something like the Charlie XCX's last album just had a lot of like just like not even the Quarantine album. The one after before that. I think Next Level Charlie's name was that. Just had a lot of like pop hits that just like blew off out of that.
Yes.
Maybe Good Ones is that. I haven't heard it yet because of singles rule. But yeah, I'm not hearing it quite from New Shapes. But it is like a pretty like interesting track that's kind of throwing back in that sense.
Yep. Next one we have The Dress by Dijon. Dijon, he released a full album, I believe, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's 12 songs, 31 minutes long. That passes for a full album nowadays. Just kidding. I mean, we call that a drop, but it's very short. Yeah. In indie especially, we've talked about it on this podcast as well. You can do a lot with that short period of time. And yeah, we just didn't get a chance to review this week along with Parcel. So not to do too much of an indie snub this week. But I thought we would do one track. And The Dress I thought was pretty interesting. It's like pure, clean, like what indie sounds like in 2020. One distilled to a track. Okay, I took a long time to get ready to, 'cause I did remember it, and my head got heavy like it tends to do. And I know that I part of the deal, but the dress looks nice on you still, and it always will. I hated myself for some time. Yeah, I mean, I like it. I like the whole drop and the record. I thought it was pretty good. So it's just hard to review so much music on this podcast. But I thought The Dress was actually a pretty good pick for the record. So it's, yeah, a pretty good representation of it. And male indie artists are doing a little bit better now, which, you know, I'm all for. Yeah, male indie artists up 1. Female indie artists up 35.
38.
So, yeah. So, all right, we're on the board. No. Yeah, it's we're coming up on the end of the year. We're coming up on award season. Should be really fun for the AudioFace Awards. And lastly, apropos of nothing, Travis Scott released 2 singles this week, one of which happens to be called Escape Plan. And we're going to hold our tongue for a news story that is actually really sad, but is incredibly...
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
But, you know, given the context of the name of the song and Travis Scott, you know.
Fake escape plan, that was the escape plan, but I ain't investigating. That shit was a waste, man, but wait, I stopped the facing, cause shit just started racing, but wait, it opened gates, and it should just stop it raining. Oh, like, we out the basement, on one floor where it's vacant. She feeling anxious to be out where it's dangerous, okay, the body changed, it especially
out here. But you know, like, the song was released on a Friday, or, you know, a Thursday, so apparently Travis Scott is also coming up with a follow-up to Astroworld, the album. And it's a long time coming. That came out in 2018. And there are songs from that were floating around in 2016 even.
Mm-hmm. Sounds okay. I think his production and stuff is very lackluster to me. It's stuck in that time capsule of mid-2010s trap, where it's like, that's where he got popular from, his ad-libs and stuff. He does the same ad-libs over and over again in any of his features as well as his solo work. And
it's
disappointing.
Yeah, you want to see a lot more growth from artists. More on that later when you get growth from artists over a period of time. But with Travis Scott, production-wise with Escape Plan, and there's also Mafia that's on here as a double drop, but we're just doing Escape Plan on here because so much music. You get kind of like the, you know, muffled trap sounds, like the darker trap sounds you get from Travis Scott, but some other flows that you saw kind of popping up in 2017. So it's will be interesting to see if Travis Scott's full record that comes out after this will, you know, push the boundaries so much as Astroworld is being accredited to doing so back when it came out. So yeah, with Travis Scott, hopefully he can come out with some newer sound from his second project. And because, yeah, he's being credited for doing so much with his, like, on a mainstream line with his music. But let's see what he's got afterwards. We've got more on Travis Scott in just a second. However, I want to get through some plugs really quickly. The 2021 AF playlist is rounding out. We are adding our favorites from this year. And we're going to give people some opportunities later this month as well. But if you have some favorites from year 2021 that you want on the playlist, send them our way. If you have some singles that you want us to review throughout the weeks, send them our way. Our email is audioface@syndicate23.co. That is audioface@syndicate23.co. Check out our bonus episodes. We did one recently on, we haven't done any recently, but we'll be changing that very soon, especially when we come into the new year. But we've done them on Kendrick Lamar, who should be releasing music very soon. We've done them on Radiohead, who is released music just this week. A bunch of other things. Check them out. Check out Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Check out Power Report, the most recent Power Report episode we did. A lot of people are loving that, as they do with Power Report episodes. It's a really good political podcast. We do say so myself. We talked about labor issues and the worker strikes that are happening in Hollywood as well as elsewhere throughout the American economy. The American economy is really interesting right now. Will continue to be interesting. So check out Power Report for that stuff. And thank you, Peter at Dead Music Productions, for mastering this episode. And episodes of Power Report at DeadMusic666 on Insta is the place you can find them. And so, I was teasing Travis Scott and all those other different things in Astroworld, so let's just go right into it.
Yeah, so there's the Astroworld Festival over in Houston, and over the weekend there's a crowd surge that killed at least 8 people in the festival. Sounded like it was like people over in the front of the pit and everything were all just crowded around. There was some panic. People got pushed over and basically were trampled to death, more or less. And it's pretty brutal with all the news that's been coming out, more and more of it. So many people were taken to the hospital because of it. And it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, there's something about a 10 or 11 year old who's in critical condition. Hopefully, we're hoping they pull through. And yeah, you had, at least among the eight who we currently know lost their lives, because a lot of folks are in critical condition because of just like the stampeding. And some folks went to cardiac arrest as well, from what we're understanding, like you were saying. But yeah, they range in ages from like teenagers to early 20s to 30s. But yeah, it just seems like a tragedy. This was happening during when Travis Scott's set was happening. And at one point, Travis Scott did appear to stop his set, saying that like, listen, it looks like someone needs medical help or whatever. Mm-hmm. But as kind of predicted, as is the aesthetic of Travis Scott, not blaming Travis Scott on this at all, but like Astroworld was a mess. there are videos of people like riding the ambulances on top of them as they were going in, trying to like pull people out in safety. Because like, I mean, like, it's lit. Yeah. Like it's in a typical like mate fashion, I'm trying to like add some light humor to a really like dark situation. But like I'm trying to get at is that people were kind of just really, really wild that night. And as a result of people's like better judgment not getting in the way, I think that got in the way of a lot of the like medical help that tried to get there. Which seems like just a real shame, because it's just real bad. It seems like crowd control, to the extent that you can do it, was not there, non-existent, really. Nope.
Exactly. And people were like saying, basically, it's like leading up to Travis Scott hopping on stage, people were like trying to go to the front. And then once he got on stage, and just a surge of everybody trying to go to the front. And it was just an absolute disaster, because people weren't able to move because they were so tightly packed in. Everybody was pushed together, packed like sardines, and they're all just like stuck trying to move forward, and people couldn't move. When people got hurt or they got trampled under, they couldn't even pull them out because they were all just stuck there. And it's awful.
Yeah, people just rushing and pushing towards the front of the stage. I mean, for what, honestly? Because I've seen this before, and it's like, I mean, of course, in a smaller scale, it's like going to concerts where like, or festivals where you know, artists are shifting through, and like one of the main headliners is going up, and everyone wants to get as close to the stage as they can right in the moment. It's like a crowd mentality. And, you know, like, sure, you want to get, I'm not going to judge people for like where they want to be in a concert. But I mean, there's when you see people who are like struggling because, you know, there's like when you, yeah, it's the force of a bunch of people moving towards the crowd. When you're that closely packed together, energy moves. And so like, you get pushed on, and then you end up pushing people in front of you, even if you're not trying, if you're trying to stay still, and just because of that energy. And you can't stay still if you have the energy of a whole crowd coming towards you. And that pushes the people who are already towards the front, who can't be pushed up onto the stage. Yeah, like you said, they get crushed, and it's just terrible. People have like hurt ribs, all these other different things. There's some weird stuff kind of floating around, like some rumors about like people getting injected with needles and stuff like that. Like TMZ had that thing. Yeah, I'm not going to roll with that. What it looks like was like, yeah, people were just very wild. There's a lot of speculation.
Which just happened a few times.
Yeah, there's that. I don't know if we did this on Audio Face, but a couple weeks ago, there was a concert in San Francisco, like the new like Chase Stadium or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yeah, three people apparently went into cardiac arrest or like got hurt at that event too. And I think like, this is just my wild out theory, but like, people after COVID-19 are used to being inside very much, and we're still adapting to being outside around normal people. And I think we just need to like relax and remember humanity a little bit, and not get so overexcited for these viral moments. Because now, yeah, I'm going to be a little bit judgy. Like, what are you going to do at the front of, or like near the front of Astroworld Festival? Like, get a blurry picture on your phone of Travis Scott doing the "It's Lit" thing he always does. Like, I don't get it. But like, especially with lives lost and things like that, it's just a kind of sad thing to happen. I will point out Apple Music was live streaming and filming the entire thing. Oops.
No.
Apple Music, known for like, you know, really wanting to have like a bleach clean image of everything, clearly did not want you know, Houston smut to be all over, you know, any user's iPhone. And so that they scrubbed the internet of like all the live stream references, and they put out a statement commemorating the victims of the Travis Scott Festival. And there were some things, again, also floating around the internet about like people who were in the festival, like, looking up to the crew who were, like, in stands elevated away from, like, the general admission. And people were, like, asking for help or, like, calling for help or whatever. But the crew were just kind of just kept filming. Reminiscent of a Boondocks episode. It's like, what? Are you just going to keep filming? Like, it's... I mean, it'll be very interesting to see, like, what comes out of that. And again, it goes back to this whole, like, humanity aspect. Like, where's the love? Seriously, like, where's the humanity in
where's the, yes. Yeah, exactly. The 10% Travis Scott margin of error.
Yeah, no Travis Scott concert is that important.
It's not worth it. No concert is worth it, in my opinion. But, Jesus. Yeah, awful. Absolutely awful. And I hope the people in critical condition pull through.
Likewise.
For sure. All right. First album review. We got Still Over It by Summer Walker. It is it's 20 songs, hour and 3 minutes long. I almost did that backwards, which
is totally fine. That's totally fine.
It's hour, 3 minutes long with 20 songs. You know what? Why not? Why not say
it? It is what it is.
Formally, it's like a solid, like, trap and B style record. You have lots of features in here. You have Bitter with narration by Cardi B. You have X for a Reason with JT and City Girls. You know, anything with City Girls is gonna be fun. You got SZA on a track. You got Pharrell Williams, a couple other people. There's quite a few on here. So it's starts off like Bitter, where it's like has like that feel, has the narration by Cardi B. It sets you up for what the record's going to entail, naturally. A little bit long for an opening track, at least for me. It kind of takes like a minute and a half, 2 minutes or so to really like to build up, and then you get that decent trap beat and you hear it, you're like, okay, I can get on board with this. It's nothing going to be spectacular, but it's a decent opening track. Then you get to X for a Reason with JT City Girls. I actually like this track. Motherfucking phone up again, I'm a blackout. Hood bitch, bring a trap out. What's up? Quick to pull up if a bitch wanna act out. He got a bitch with a check now. Doing tricks on the dick, you ain't shipping him to check out. I got that nigga in the bigger phone. You the help in the service, he don't need no more. Or did you get that bitch sit back? Cause a real bitch will pull up with the click clack. I like the groovy trap beat in there. It's like I really like the features on here. I think everybody kind of flows together well and whatnot. But
yeah, I think we're having just one of the City Girls. It's just enough City Girls. I think when it's you just have one of them, that's the nice mix of it. But yeah, they work really well together. And I will say I didn't do like my sort of top line thing of this with this album, but Listen, neopop, as we call R&B, go back to previous episodes of Audio Face for our like qualms of that, and sure, also
Tyler, neo?
Yeah, or you know, Tyler the Creator's words on this, but I feel like while it has hit like a really good renaissance, and it's kind of taking the best of what pop music sounds like, the rap parts of it, the truly pop parts of it, the throwbacks of all of it, the old R&B like classic like parts you put in music. Mm-hmm. However, all the albums can start to sound the same. It can all start to get a little bit stale and all that. And so coming into this album, coming from Summer Walker, who I really respect as an artist and think is like really one of the best out there doing currently, I was looking, okay, I'm going to be really picky here because this is a really good project, but I'm going to be really picky here for some instrumental differences and, you know, pushing the boundaries a little bit there and see what can be done. And you get it more towards the middle, I'll say, and I'm happy for that. And I could definitely demand a little bit more, but I even got that. I was surprised I even got a little bit of that, you know, not, I won't say experimentation because we're doing a Radiohead episode. I have to be very careful with that phrase. But you're doing a little bit of boundary pushing in songs that we'll get to a little bit later. But I do appreciate 100%. That. It's not just a regular trap and B neopop album.
No. And that's what I was going to get to. Because the beginning of the album, it sets you up thinking, like, when I heard X for a Reason, it's like, okay, I like that one. No Love with featuring SZA, I thought that was, like, a decent track. But with the SZA track, I was like, okay, this is where I'm like, all right, might get worried. Let's see how long that this record goes, kind of this slow-down neo-pop sound that we've heard a lot this year, a lot last year as well. But, towards the middle of the record, you get a couple different tracks that – excuse me, that just change up the beat a little bit. They slow it down, speed it up. They kind of keep you on your toes a little bit within the record, because towards the end of the record, it feels quite long. Towards like after the Pharrell track, you have like another 5 songs or so after that. And that's where, to me, it got really long, but I did enjoy the middle of that record. But yeah. Again, I think this is something that the more of these, you know, again, you get into this renaissance of neopop and trap being this, what you can do with it is you can experiment more, expand your horizons on some of the production, which you do get that a little bit in the middle. But I think what a lot of people need to do with these records, they have to make them shorter. Because with this, if you put everything on there that you want to, you're going to get played out. Because my issue with this is a lot of those middle tracks, I had a list I got to in the second listen through, because the first listen through, I almost forgot about them because it dragged on for me quite a while towards the end. If you can shorten it up, make it more concise and have those points that you want, but still have your bangers naturally in the record. But if you cut like 5-6 songs out of here, which you easily can, it would make this project way better, at least in my opinion. I think that's something that needs to be done a little bit more within these genres and stuff. Because you have so many artists and stuff making these, so many big headline artists and stuff making these records. So we need to get a little bit more concise within it until we get something where more and more people start to expand their horizons with it, or they get a new thing, new sound, something.
Yeah, I agree, because what you have here is really good, but it could benefit from some of the concision that we see from albums of late that, you know, really make a lot of impact with the short amount of time they have. Because, yeah, definitely, like, a lot of these songs that are featureless, I mean, like, Summer Walker is really excellent at expressing emotion and pain and loss. That's a lot of what this album is about, and overcoming that, still over it is... You know, you can read a lot of it as, they're over it, but they made a whole album about them, you know, not being over it. But it's really like, whereas we criticize some artists for not going into the depth and detail of that pain and that growth of like loss and suffering, Summer Walker goes in, very much in on these things. But you get to like song 8. Insane, I'd say, right? Where you start to get sort of more of an acknowledgement of some of the, not quite especially indie, but some of like the newer parts of Trap and B. You maybe start, or Neopop, you maybe start to see from 2019, where it's sort of, you know, my favorite sort of coffee club jazz, like nighttime vibe kind of thing.
The old jazz standard.
Yeah, that's all really nice. You go to Constant Bullshit, which got something that I was kind of hoping for, which was a little bit of like a guitar flair in there.
Yep.
Just like, cause come on, indie's coming back. Whoever said guitar was dead was right for maybe like a year and a half, but now it's starting to come back as little flares. It's, oh, what's that little twangy thing in there? What's that thing in the background? Yeah, you could. I was right here, showing you what the word being loyal is. But we were always in a fighting. The truth is I was only trying to make it right. Even though I might have been wrong in the way that I didn't keep it private. Responding in the best way I knew. When you know that a bitch stay down.
Exactly. You can do so much with it. You just have to think outside the box. And I think the issue with a lot of these big name artists is a lot of them work with similar producers and stuff. You get the Jack Antonoff effect of working with similar people or people who have similar ideas, where then you make records and then you're like, you think in this box of, okay, I want to make a record of a relationship breakup record or personal things, so on and so forth. And people think, oh, it needs to sound like this. It can sound whatever the hell you want. But I think more people need to take that risk and take that leap of faith and do that, and you can make something spectacular. Because we've seen that this year, especially. We've seen a lot of different sounding records from different artists, different headline artists, different smaller artists, so on and so forth, where you take that leap and just to like push yourself a little bit more, and that makes a big effort, or it makes a big change. So,
yeah. You continue to throw out Unloyal with Ari Lennox, I think. Ari Lennox just really performs its kills on that. Ari Lennox has also just had a year as well, but
100%.
Makes this podcast so, makes the award show so hard, but so fun. I think they really complement each other's styles right there in that song. Toxic with Lil Durk. Well, I think that could be one of the more forgettable features on this record because this record has so many good features. I thought Lil Durk actually brought it lyrically in that. And so
no, I think honestly, all the features on this record did their part. And we've been getting a string of that the past month or so of actual features really doing what they need to do, which is hop on for a track just to spice it up, have their little bit of flavor, but still be cohesive within the rest of the record. And you get that with this as well. Yeah. As much as I don't normally like Lil Durk, he was actually did pretty well with it.
Yeah. You have that right there, the classic Pharrell produced track. It's very like meant to be earwormy and catchy.
Super Pharrell track. Yeah.
Cause they know if I let him hit it, that nigga is gone. It's a threat that they might lose control. Cause if I let him hit it, that nigga is gone. Oh.
Yeah. I think it's perfectly fine. I think it's, you know, as with all Pharrell tracks, he's got like the demon's blood. It's going to be, and here's Alex, Dan's pivot to Alex Jones. No, but like his stuff is going to perform as like pop hits. It's going to be fine, right? You might hear that right there a lot, but I think it's a perfectly fine mix. I just want to see what that Neptunes album looks like. It's been being teased for about a year and a half now.
Yes, maybe for a while now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But overall, before we get too lengthy on this, because we do have a lot more to review, I think it's a decent record through and through. Like, you have a lot of different sounds, especially towards that middle part. Features are fantastic throughout it. It's just, I would like it to be a little more concise a little bit in a smaller package, so that way we can get into it a little bit more, and then you can release other tracks and stuff as you want as another drop, or as like a B-side thing or something, where you can still have that stuff out, but not necessarily into one whole record, because your other things are going to get missed in there. But the experimentation, the other points that you'll get will sometimes get missed because of that.
Yeah. My last thoughts, this is a bottom heavy album, I'd say. I don't really hate most of the bottom of this record. I think it ends really nicely. The Fourth Baby Mama Prelude and Fourth Baby Mama and Ciara's Prayer, I think, encapsulate that real feeling of what Summer Walker is trying to get across and get through. But yeah, I just think it takes really long in the beginning after that SZA track at song 3 to really kind of get to the point and get to that experimentation around, you know, insane, constant bullshit, song 10, switch a nigga out. So like, I think, like you're saying in the beginning, by taking the cues of newer artists, not just even on how you come out in the sound, but also just by like packing a lot in a little bit of time, I think this album could have benefited a lot. But what you have here is still really, really solid neopop. So with that, we have the arbitrary scale. We do arbitrary scales every single week on Audio Face, because if we gave a ranked to a ranking system, we wouldn't have just talked about Summer Walker's record for 10 minutes. This week is Kirsten Sinema's Donors. Similar to Joe Manchin's Donors, we got criticisms on Audio Face that we're beating up on men too much. So go ahead. Here's Kirsten Sinema's Donors. Which one are you going to give this one?
This is the University of California. God damn it.
God damn
fucking
it.
UC system. Piece of shit UC system. There we go, baby.
That's
solid.
I was gonna say, before we were like actually recording the podcast, when I like was going through the donor list and I was like, oh, god damn it, and before I didn't say anything, that's the one I reacted to, and I was like, yo, why?
I knew U of A was gonna do it, because she does, I don't know if she does a class there or something, like I knew U of A would do that, but I'm like, University of California, I'm like, bro,
yeah,
I hate everything.
The UC does a lot of donations to milquetoast liberal candidates, so I don't know. That's kind of annoying. Moving on, we dip into Westworld. We no longer can. He's legally changed his name to Ye. I don't even know if it's Ye West. I think it's just Ye. So Kanye West doesn't really do interviews very often, but he did an interview where he discussed a lot of different things. He calls himself, so let's just get right into the goods. On vaccination status, he describes himself as half vaccinated. So he's taken one of the vaccines. Sorry, he's like one dose of one of the two dose vaccines. Which is like it's weird. All the anti-vax people who have actually been vaccinated and don't want to lie about it, because they don't want to get in trouble for accidents
and stuff. Yeah.
Because they don't want to get in trouble for like accidentally killing people. Like they always do this dance of like, oh no, I didn't fully listen to the shills. I didn't do everything they said. I didn't listen to all the rules. I, you know, did only one thing. Even Trump, he's like, oh yeah, I took the vaccine and I recommend you take it too. But you know, only if it's your choice. You do it yourself. It's always got to be couched around this. You're special and you did the choice yourselves. You have your free will just your like freedoms. Everyone else.
Yeah.
Now go to work like you're obviously free to do, or else you'll lose your job and that'll be totally fine because you'll lose your house, which you're obviously free to do, and et cetera. Donda Deluxe Edition, which I joked about last week, is actually coming. So that's great because, of course, a 2-hour album needs a deluxe edition
of songs that will be forever changed as well.
Kanye says his divorce from Kim Kardashian West isn't finalized. He apparently
probably because they're just divvying everything up.
Yeah, Kanye West was apparently upset about Kim Kardashian's appearance on SNL, which didn't have to do with music, so I didn't have to pay attention to it, and I love that. But yeah, Kanye saying my kids want their parents to stay together, so I want us to be together. You know, it's usual like mid-divorce dad stuff. But the really juicy stuff is Kanye West standing with DaBaby yep. and Marilyn Manson, because he says, when I sit next to DaBaby and Marilyn Manson, they can't cancel a song. They'll hit you with the accusations of somebody who you was with 10 years ago, pulled in alleys against their will. That's different from a hug, but it's classified as the same thing. It's power and politics, you know, power hungry maniacs control. This is 1984 mind control that we live in and mob mentality. So it kind of just goes into as a usual Kanye West thing, like not really making much sense. Like, there's a lot of layers to this, as we also talk about, like, cancel culture doesn't really exist, and the fact that, as we're talking about in this episode of Audio Face, you can see another clip on YouTube or like very shortly on later in the podcast, DaBaby's back on tour. Yep. All right, like a month and a half ago, it's like, oh no, DaBaby's canceled and all this stuff happened. He's going back on tour. It's fine, like it's all good, like whatever. The word cancel has been given way too much weight, right? This is about Kanye West using his platform and making the choice to give Marilyn Manson and DaBaby an additional platform, and thereby, in a way, like kind of condoning a lot of the stuff they're being criticized for, and like
exactly, especially Marilyn Manson is the really bad one. To
yeah,
me. Like yeah. That's the one that is absolutely grievous because you have multiple people putting allegations against him and stuff, and pretty high level actresses and stuff putting allegations against him and suing him and doing a bunch of things, and it's pretty brutal what you read. So you're doing that, giving him a platform, like that's not right, my guy. But also Kanye's like has a schizophrenic mind, so who knows what the hell's going on in there anyways.
Yeah, we're also not expecting any more from Kanye West, but like there's this thing with celebrities who get surprised at criticism and they call that criticism, they're trying to censor me, they're trying to cancel me. And it's like, no, you did a thing and you stand by your thing and you're totally fine to stand by that thing, and we can criticize you about it. We can talk about it. That's just how it works. And now we get to just the good shit. So randomly here and there, he's open to doing a versus, but he would never do a versus against Dre-Z, but he would do one against Drake. And now we get to the good shit, all right? Because
I would pay $90 pay-per-view to watch that train wreck.
I would pay $9 because I wouldn't get enough bars out of that to make an album. Neither Kanye nor Drake can rap, let us be clear. But no, Kanye took shots at Big Sean and John Legend, saying that basically he was just mad that Big Sean and John Legend wouldn't support / openly condemned Kanye West's run for 2020, saying that the worst thing I ever done was sign Big Sean. And of course, speaking of the election, Kanye West, like everyone, including Joe Rogan, claims he was shadow banned. But the Drizzy stuff, Kanye compared his relationship with Drake to like the NBA, you know? Quote, people are either on your team or they're on the other team. And everybody plays games in all different kinds of ways. And Kanye praised Drake for making massively accessible music and that it added something to the algorithm.
when you say, oh, thanks for making something to the algorithm, man, you've lost your shit.
I mean, I
it's hilarious.
At
for
YouTube,
music.
Yeah. For music, definitely.
It's different if you're a content creator because that's literally your job. But for music, you're like, thanks for making something for the algorithm. You're like, what in dystopian shit are we in? You talk about 1984, my guy.
And also, there's a difference between like clout rappers who are using like SoundCloud and then like their own celebrity status on Twitter to make news that is very loosely related to their music versus Drake, who in the year 2021, 2022 is a superstar. So like, if Drake pulled a Kanye and released Poop De Scoop De Poop, that would also be for the algorithm because Drake made a song. Drake released a .mp3 file onto the internet and therefore the algorithm has been fed. Same with Kanye. In fact, it feels like 100% projection to me. But what we really get into is Kanye confronting Drake on a lot of the raps. Quote, I had this conversation with Drake that's like, I never fucked Kim, but I was like, but you acted like you did. Did you ever DM her? Everything else around it. Because it ain't about that. Because it ain't just about the actual act of it. Because Kanye was quoting all the lyrics, like, you know, Hidden Hills, all this other stuff, like stuff that has been, you know, deemed as like pot shots towards Kim, like Drake and Kim Kardashian. But I think what you're getting at, which is the funniest thing here, which is Drake lies in his music.
his whole music is clout, so I don't know what you want.
Like that's the revelation, like just coming to it. It's like, yes, yay. Drake lies. Drake is cap. Drake is a lot of cap. And we were talking about it in our review of Certified Lover Boy, and everyone talked about it too. That like there are certain parts of Drake like you can't take seriously because you know he's not.
I said that at like Knife Talk with 21. It's hilarious hearing 21 go up there, literally like that's what he does, and then Drake trying to go on the same track and trying to act all gangster. Meanwhile, 21's over here like it's a knife.
Project Pat, 21 Savage, they're right in their element. Drake is like, what are you doing here, Sonny? You're trying to act
what
like
you
an
doing
OG?
Here, buddy?
Okay. Sure.
What's up, fella?
But yeah, Kanye is a mess. And if you in case you think he has seen the light when it comes to any of his ways, any of his positions,
no.
Marilyn Manson, Justin Bieber joined him at a recent Sunday Service concert. I haven't seen any updates on whether or not the Sunday Service people are being paid for their services on Sundays, but once we find out about that, we'll report it on AudioFace. Thank you, Sean, for making it through Westworld with me. Let's go into the rest of the week in music with Drones.
We got Drones by Terrace Martin. It is
Drones.
Game of Drones. It's 40 minutes, 13 songs long. Solid fun, like funk album, because Dan is on the Funk Is Right tour. So
Funk is back, but Dan is right.
Yeah, exactly. But the Dan is Right Funk Is Back tour. I just got to figure out a name for it. I'm just backwards to it.
Aubrey and the Three Amigos.
he's no. anyways,
it's a nice menagerie of funk tracks.
Literally, yes. By the way, if you had told me that there's gonna be a track with James Fauntleroy, Ty Dolla $ign, Kendrick Lamar, and Snoop Dogg, and it was gonna be a funk like fuckboy track, I would say you're high. I'm like, that's not happening. And the second song, we get that, and I was thrown for a loop. I was like, I was not expecting that at all. She calls me only when it's warm and wet. I call her only when I want it. They call us drones, and we both know. Computers in the dark, making more clones. And no conversation is there. Communication is there. Is there. Penetration is there. It's hilarious.
That's your title track too, and honestly there's so much going on, like I barely noticed Snoop was in there. I can barely tell Kendrick is in there. Yeah,
and Kendrick's at the beginning.
Yeah, it's all just like it's coming at you
so funny. It's just like a total chill, like fucks on you by the fireplace dancing around, you know, got a drink in your hand, and it's just like you have all these hard rappers on here, and it's just that it's so funny.
It seems like it should be out of place, but it actually isn't.
It's not. but it's not, it fits somehow. You got all those people that are not known for that, right? But put it on there, but in the context of the record and within even the other features in here, you got like Corday, how many times it can change his name? The world may never know. You got Chanel Torres, Celeste, you got a couple others, and they're all, they all fit pretty well too. So it's just, it was just funny to me when I listened to that. Third song, you got Leave Us Be, really good funk track too that I enjoyed a lot. This was the one where I heard the bass line, everything, and the drums. I go, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The, once you just go into that song, it sounds like just like funk standards. Like these songs that have been sampled in like rap music, like hip hop music, like real classics. Yep. Yeah, yeah. It really just makes you feel right at home in there. You also, later on in the album, you get some funk that is infused with like newer things as well. I think the track with Aaron Ray and Smino, This Morning, mm-hmm. just top notch, just spot on. I love so much about that track and how it turned out.
I got a minimalist shout it. She don't want me smoking my gravelly, but her banana leaf, sorry. I was rolling up on her vanity, she got to telling these stories. Has she finally found some sanity in these hating hoes? Must be off that good cane, that danity, and it don't
It has just enough of like the modern flair you would expect from like a Steve Lacy or like the internet, that whole kind mm-hmm. of crew, who really kind of pioneered the whole funk is back thing. And that was the thing I called an audio face when it happened. So
years ago. Yep. 100%. Yeah.
But you're really getting all of it's a very feature, much more feature heavy than even the last album you reviewed by Summer Walker. But like, again, all the features here perform really well, even near the end when you have Evil Lives with YG. YG fits. It works. It's fine. It's good.
My favorite definitely is the sixth song right after This Morning is Tapped with Chanel Torres and Celeste. Please believe what we are telling you. The drums are tapped. Please believe what we are telling you. The drums are tapped. Please believe what we are telling you. I like just how odd it is at the beginning, where you get this weird beat, you get like a lot of synths and stuff in the background, a lot of different sounds you hear. It's a really good breaker in the middle of the record to me, because you get, or like towards the beginning of the middle, I should say, because you get the first five tracks are really not solid, like chill funk, standard funk, modern funk, as I like to call it now. And then you get Tapped, which is more of like experimental-ish tracker. So you got some 80s vibes in there. You got some modern twists and stuff with the way that the synths are made and the way the drum beats are. And Chanel Torres and Celeste are fantastic on this track too. Really, really enjoyed this. This is quite a few times.
Yeah. There's so much on here. And like, there's a lot of little interludes and references to the Crenshaw district, a historically black district in South Los Angeles, mm-hmm. Especially through like griots of the Crenshaw district, griots being like community elders, leaders, yep. that kind of thing. And yeah, Limerick Park being before it was a metro station, it was, yeah, you like a major, actually not even a metro station yet, so don't sleep on that. But It was just like a community hub for black people, black revolutionaries, that kind of thing in the 60s and 70s. But also like kind of today, you have different events and, you know, like any sort of community center. You have like your Sunday gatherings and farmers markets and et cetera. So
can I have $5?
Let me hold $5. no, but you get and through that, through a lot of the artists you have on here, you get a lot of like, you know, throwbacks to LA, callbacks to that culture, mm-hmm. you know, like laid back, low riding kind of vibes with, yeah, that like funk sort of throwback, which we're going to get a lot of, like, spoiler alert. That's my brain. No offense to people who lisp, because I do as well, obviously. We're getting Silk Sonic later this month. That is going to, like, unfortunately, because people love Silk Sonic so much, that's just going to change the game.
That's Silk Sonic has been like, we've been waiting for that for a minute, and it's gonna be a record. I already know it.
And the reason I say it is because like it is that thing that is getting old heads who love funk very much. Mm-hmm. Like in here and going like, finally, there's some new music going out there. And first of all, like, these are old heads who just like need to branch out and listen to more music. Like, Drones on here has a lot of bangers, right?
But Drones, fantastic.
What I'm saying is this is all ushering in a period where funk is just like really singing out in mainstream pop music. And I really love that 100%. Because we're doing throwbacks of every other kind of music. I think funk is relatively untapped and really powerful to do, has a really good ability to work in dance settings and club settings and more intimate settings. Like it's a really, it's a genre you can do a lot with, let's say, and a lot's done here.
It's very versatile. There's a lot of different sounds I want people to experiment with. Example, like the neopop stuff that we talked about earlier, record. You can add more funk beats into that and have a little bit different cadences in some of your tracks, or add different stuff to experiment with. Even indie artists can experiment with, which you've heard a little bit here or there every once in a while. But I think more and more people need to do it and explore, like, hear records like Drones. Get into other ones that we've talked about, but going back to Drones, I really like Evil Eyes with YG and Malaya. Shocked that YG was actually really good on this track. Honestly, I was waiting for that to be a bad one on there. Nope, still worked. So, and that's three tracks end pretty well. Sick of Crying, The Bridges You Smoke, Don't Let Go, and Listen.
I wouldn't say they do like a neo synth gospel kind of thing that like I respect. I'm not like into gospel music like at all, really. But I saw what they were going for and I was like, okay, I respect that. I get with it. Like, I'm not into gospel, but like one of my favorite songs, you know, the Sean is like and my favorite album, and there's this Don't Get Lost in Heaven, Demon Days, which like inadvertently ends up being a gospel song.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I really like the modern spin it does on that with the last like five and a half minutes of the album. Overall, ends up being really good.
Yeah, I agreed. Very good record. Go check it out, please. And Funk is back, baby. Arbitrary scale this week is Chris and Cinema's Donors, because we do arbitrary scale every week because rating scales are stupid. Look at the Pitchfork. Let's remake rating scales and let's downgrade Random Access members because we're all high off our tits. Damn.
I'm going to go first this time. I'm going to give this DaVita, Belvita? No, DaVita. Yeah, I always confuse it with those Belvita, like snacks that you can get for breakfast. But no, this is the kidney dialysis company that every 2 years manages to get a proposition in California's ballot to allow them to make more money. Weird how that works. It's almost as if they donate to politicians who are in their interest. Oh, wait, the arbitrary scale is Kirsten Sinema's donors. Interesting. What's your picture?
This is Blue Cross Blue Shield, baby. Health insurance. Let's lobby that shit. Let's get the premiums. Let's go.
It's all up in there.
By the way, looking at this list of how much it is absolutely infuriating. Like, hippity hoppity, baby. Let's get chippity choppity.
Yeah. And it's also to keep in mind here, we're talking about Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who are blocking a lot of what, like, you know, Democrats want to get done and can get done for people that will help people who are Democrats and Republicans of all walks of life. But there's a bunch of other Democrats who are in the shadows, who are also benefiting from the fact that they're taking most of the heat, who are also taking donor money and standing in the way of progress. Hashtag no politics. Moving on. Oh, God damn it. Politics. So, this is one of those things where like politics has blended into music in a way I didn't want it to originally, or didn't intend it to, but whatever. Originally, there's a song called Let's Go Brandon by Loza Alexander, who's like this artist that we can drop a kind of sample of.
As I pull off in the Aston, don't nobody like his ass, huh? Tried to cover up and tell the people, go Brandon. But we know what they saying, though. You can hear the chant in every post. Don't nobody want this commie because we not in China. Everybody hated China.
And there's a lot of references in there. Like, it's built around sound clips of people saying fuck Joe Biden, because like that's a chant and it has to do with, you know, politics, because Joe Biden's the current president. And Now there's a song with Bryson Gray, Tyson James, and Chandler Crump that is also called Let's Go Brandon.
Hey, this is about control. Everybody knows. Everyone complies. Way to cons of pros. I don't need a plane. I just hit the road. I do what I want. I can't sell my soul. Market about to crash. This is what you chose. Ruining the country. I've been best to go. You gon' take the mark. I take never roles. I'm a man of God. I can never
let's
fold.
Go Brandon. I keep a drum like I'm Nick Cannon. Hey, hey, let's go Brandon. Pandemic ain't real. They just planted. Hey, hey, let's go Brandon. When you ask questions,
it's a thing you're seeing on t-shirts. It's become part of political discourse. So let's go to the top. Like,
well, Let's Go Brandon originated from a NASCAR event where a guy, driver Brandon Brown, won the event, and the whole crowd was going to fuck Joe Biden. And the announcer who was interviewing Brandon Brown after his win goes up, says, "Oh, they're shouting, Let's Go Brandon."
Yeah,
you could pretty hear the, like, you could pretty clearly hear it and stuff. And then that's why, and then all these Republicans are doing like, "Tee hee, Let's Go Brandon." We're saying, really, we're saying, fuck Joe Biden. Am I okay?
Well, there's a lot of layers to it. Fun. Like, there's a lot of layers to it. So there's the, I'm going to take my bias out of here. On the right wing, they're constantly trying to say that all the media is left wing. And so they're trying to be biased against conservatives. And so this example of a NASCAR event where people are saying, fuck Joe Biden, and the announcer said, let's go Brandon, is actually a case of that. It's a microcosm of that. I think that's a stretch and goes against like a lot of like, existing academic arguments about this, but like the other argument that's being made is, hey, listen, you had celebrities elsewhere like doing things from like beheading Donald Trump to a popular song saying fuck Donald Trump, and this one is charting, whereas the songs that went fuck Donald Trump weren't charting and actually weren't that like successful, let's say. I mean, they had a lot of streams, but they weren't Billboard chart successful if you want to use that metric. So they're complaining of a bias of, oh, is this too vulgar for like people in the media? Why is there this like, why are people upset over Let's Go Brandon when people were saying fuck Donald Trump a couple years ago and that was totally fine? And it's like, first of all, Donald Trump was the guy who ran for president and was vulgar to begin with. So it was sort of like a, people were stepping up the rhetoric to meet that. Second of all, people were saying fuck Obama, buck Obama. People were saying fuck George W. Bush, fuck Bill Clinton. People say fuck whoever is the leader because that's just how people are. That's how they engage politically. And honestly, I'm down with it. But I think the real reason you're getting these offshoot songs is like, and someone in Billboard mentions this pretty quickly, is that if you want to make a pro-left-leaning or like a broadly speaking pro-left-leaning song for like, you know, equal rights and climate change or things like that, it's a very saturated market to make those songs. Whereas if you want to make a pro-conservative song, there aren't many of those songs. And so when there are a few of those songs, you'll get a lot of streams and a lot of listeners from people who want that. It's like a, there's not a lot of supply, but there's a good amount of demand kind of deal, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I just think that like the weird thing happening here is that conservatives are trying so hard to create this like fake panic around it, and it's gonna work because there are people who are waiting to listen to a fake narrative about them who will take it in and go, see, the people in the media said the thing I already believe, there, it has to be true. But of course, like, it's just people cashing in, as is all of the music industry. So we'll go into it. Whatever.
Yeah. And speaking of the things that they love most, they love cancel culture, right? They love yelling about cancel culture. But Rolling Loud, music brand, they're backing DaBaby's tour, saying that he has grown and learned after the homophobic rant. I wouldn't say it was a rant. I'd say more of a tirade, because it was multiple that kept going on and on and on and on. I'm like, okay, we get it. You don't like gays. Calm down there. But anyways, he's going to be touring again and stuff, as we alluded to earlier in the podcast. His slap on the slap on the wrist is basically over, and now he's doing some different events. Yeah, he's going to do the live show, Killa Tour, which will hit more than 20 cities starting in late November. And he's back on. All the people who are backing him saying, oh, he's learning from his mistakes and this and that. I'm like, no, dude literally made a music video saying AIDS and like y'all die and stuff. So it's pretty brutal. And cancel culture doesn't exist. I'm telling you.
Yeah, so
it's really not that big of a thing.
First of all, yeah, let's just go back even 2 months ago when there was this whole hubbub about DaBaby saying all these things, and LGBTQ rights groups were upset, and musicians and celebrities were upset, and mm-hmm. there was also this counter backlash with people saying, "Oh, look, look at all these, look at this like whole slew of people coming after DaBaby for what he said. It seems to be like a racially tinged thing. It seems to have all these other different things." It was like a counter backlash and the counter backlash. Yes. Think about how much money was made by media outlets just by talking about
not
contributing to the conversation. But what we were saying on Audio Face is that, as we kind of say on Power Report, as I've said throughout my career, cancel culture doesn't exist. The idea of canceling has just been used as a phrase that has a lot more power as a word to represent like very nebulous terms that people can't concretely point to. But in reality, for like the celebrities who talk about it all the time as though it's actually something that affects them, it doesn't affect them because they have so much celebrity and status and power that ultimately too many people make money off of them for them to just go away forever. So what you're getting here is DaBaby is just going to get back on touring again. He did his whole apology tour, which I said he could have done easier by just like doing a feature with Lil Nas X and posting a Notes app apology. But no, he did it the long way by dragging his feet through it. And he went to do something with GLAAD, and GLAAD said, oh, you know, he took in a lot of information and he learned. All bullshit. But
it's all cap.
For a moment here, let's allow for the idea somewhere in between the reality that is DaBaby is like said a bunch of ignorant, dumbass things that to some extent he probably still believes. And there should be a space for him to learn and show that he's learning these things. And maybe just like, hey, I'm just not going to touch this anymore because of how like toxic of an issue it is. And maybe for him to, again, show some tangible improvement, not just like, hey, I'm going to throw some money in this direction, but like, what can he do to like be empowering for gay Black youth that he's sort of just like shitting all on, that are his fans even too, right? I'd like to see some of that as well. But I think that I'm not asking for DaBaby to be canceled in any sort of way. I'm just saying that the idea that he was going to be canceled in the first place was ridiculous.
It was never going to happen. Exactly.
Yeah.
Might get barred from like one or two things here, but it's not going to hurt his career.
Yeah, and no like long-term impact to his career. And on the flip side, we should still be expecting more of an like, what are you doing to make up for this apology? Like more of a recompense, let's say, for what's going on than just, okay, he did some, he had a 1.5 walkthrough at a GLAAD meeting and like did a thumbs up at the right times and did some photo ops, so it was all good. There's got to be something like more accountability to be had here, let's say. Mm-hmm. But hey, cheers to cancel culture.
Yep.
Cancel me, right. Please. Looks like you make more money from it. Anyways.
Moving on, we've got Eminem's drop. We have 2.5. 4 stars out of 5. No, we got 2.5. It is 12 songs, 26 minutes long. Nice little solid drop from Eminem. Slowly, like, emerging as one of our favorite artists we like to talk about on the podcast. Really like his music, his features, everything. I think he's really pushing music forward. I'd say fashion forward within his decision-making and stuff, within his musicality and everything, which I believe so.
And definitely fashion forward with his style.
And 100% fashion forward with his style. Like, if you see his Instagram, the shit's hilarious. But I fucked with it.
Before you go too much into the music, I did want to kind of go into the philosophy of the drop, because, like, that is what I think it'll also lead into one of the reasons why we like Aminé so much. So if you look through Aminé's discography, you'll also see an album called 1. Aminé. I do this all the time. If you look through Aminé's discography, you'll also see 1.5, a drop that came out in 2018 after his first drop, Good For You. First album, Good For You. And these 0.5 products, they're named 0.5 as like 0.5 albums. It's meant to be like, I'm kind of paraphrasing.
Sorry,
I'm paraphrasing from Aminé here. it's meant to be like, these are just some sounds I'm experimenting with and working on. It's not meant to be a complete album. I'm working on things that should feel like a complete album and like a complete finished work that is me growing as an artist. But on the way there, there's still a bunch of stuff I want to share with people. There's a bunch of ideas that don't fit into a larger thing that I want to sort of adapt and grow and show people with. And so that's what my 0.5 projects are for. It's very deliberate. It's very thought out of thinking like, you need some time in between albums. You need some time to flush out some ideas and be able to abandon some ideas to commit to your better ones. And the 0.5 projects are really just amino acids saying that, look, I'm really close to working on my next album. I know Limbo is really hot and you keep chewing on that, but I'm already going to my next level shit here and you're really going to like it, but here's some stuff here. And that's audio phase. Like, we love
that's
when
exactly
that
exactly what we love. Yes. You get ideas out. They don't necessarily need to be a full record, but just to get the process through so that way your main LPs don't need to have so much extra fluff that doesn't necessarily need to be there or anything. So,
speaking of fluff.
Yes.
Going into the album, though.
Yeah. So, you have a lot of hilariously titled tracks, by the way. YBA is the first opening track, just short minute 45 second track. Most of these all these tracks are under 3 minutes long, usually around the 2 minute mark or so, like average run time for most of it. So it's really short, concise, to the point. Gets you into it. YBA is like perfect, like fast, upbeat kind of experimental trap track. So that's the thing I really enjoy with Amine, is within his rapping, with his songwriting stuff, he gets a lot of influences from a bunch of different people. Influences from Flo Tai, from he had Ben Staples on his last record. You have, and he listens to a lot of dance music and stuff, so he gets so much influences from all these other music that he's listening to, and he can trap and he can change up stuff within his own music because of that. And you hear that example, like you hear that with YBA at the beginning, where you get a fun dance beat, fun track. And the same thing with Colors as well. You get a lot of different electronic beats in there, but it goes well within the way the song is made. That makes sense.
Yeah, I've always put Amine and Smino in this sort of like, I've put them in this like alternative rap category, where a lot of the stuff they're producing and like the production they have on their records, it's sort of like chimey, like almost like wind chimes. Like it's playing a lot with those like
yeah, that's
higher
actually
tones
to
and things
put it.
Like that.
Yeah. Chime and trap?
Way too much of that chud noise in the English language for me to like really like work with it. Like, we'll workshop that as we do with all names on Audio Face that do or do not stick. But no, you get a lot of that sound with it. That is mixed with some electronic things on here. Now, and I'm going to call out these next two songs, which sound a lot like two other songs I like. Not to say like, hey, Amine's taking notes here, like copying notes here. But like, he's pulling from places that I wouldn't ordinarily bring into rap or would consider to be like the very, very far edge of rap. Case in point, OK With Me sounds like Alienation by The Voids. It's like this really like indie track kind of thing that's kind of muffled in the background. And I was listening to this with one of my friends in her car the other day. And we played the songs back to back because we both like Amine. And I was like, hey, this sounds like this indie song. Can I like play it for you? And like, she really liked it. She was like, then we played the Amine track back to it again, and we're like, oh wow, this is. Maybe not close enough to where it's like inspired, or maybe is inspired. But the point is, this is Julian Casablancas over here with his like band doing some like really bassy indie stuff in 2018 that we reviewed on Audio Face, might I add. And then you have Amine, who is taking a similar type of beat and flip and bringing that to a context of rap music like that. And again, this is not meant to be like an album that we stick to. This is just a project. He's just throwing this out there. That's what we like on Audio Face. That's the experimentation. That's the pulling from different genres. That's chef's kiss.
Example. And the track before that, Neo to me is, if you made Don Kamatic a trap song, is what Neo sounds like.
Yep.
It has like the synthy RuneScape sounding trumpets in the background, but you put a trap beat over it and it's just hilarious to me. Because when I heard that, I immediately thought, like, this sounds a lot like Don Kamatic, and I'm all for it. So again, you get that with a lot of the tracks. You have one after Okay With Me, you have Diddy Dum Da Da, one of my favorite names for it.
Diddy Dum Da Da or Prada Da Bang?
I'm Prada. but you have so many of these tracks where you can now get an idea of what his sound, what is going through his mind and everything, of what he wants to make. He has a lot of ideas, a lot of different sounds, and everything is very new and like an upbeat. Like example, Charmander song track 7 almost has like a drum and bass beat level of track.
On me, yo, bitch. Look, these niggas be my sons. Without me, they be done. Where the fuck would you get all your mobile pictures from? That's why I've been living on this island with my blunt. Ignoring all these niggas because my energy is priceless.
I've been living on an island too.
Like the pace of it sounds like a drum and bass song, but it's completely stripped back of a lot of the drum and bass. But you can hear the influence of it, even the way he's rapping. The vocals are going, it's just boom, 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 and you have like this, almost like hype song, sound background, hype voice going, and you can beat a beat on it. So it's really cool.
It reminded me, Charmander was another one of those moments. It reminded me of JPEG Mafia's Twisted, which we reviewed just a couple of weeks ago. It's a very similarly like fast-paced chimey chime rap like kind of deal.
Some of his stuff is drum and bassy and different stuff.
Yeah. Not exactly as drum and bassy, but definitely very similar in that between the two. And wait, I'm just now realizing Twisted is there's this track on Aminé's song, like, album called Twisted, but the song I'm thinking about is it was called Trust. Or Trusted on the JPEG Mafia album. But yeah, they all sounded like very inspired by each other. Again, not in a bad way. Trust, the very first song on the album. Not in a bad way, but like I like electronic sounding rap music. I want more of it. I'm glad that more is being made of it, even if it kind of like overlaps in some ways. I like the vibe very much.
And my favorite track on the record is Between the Lines.
What you putting down? Little mama fed up,
because the opening of Between the Lines almost sounds like Tori Amoa. Like, it sounds a lot like, like a Tori Amoa track, and then you get to the middle of it, and then you get to the rappy part. And it's cool because you get so many different sounds. You get like an indie fuckboy-ish sound onto a trap track, which is really cool. So again, all these ideas and stuff that are popping on here, I'm very, very excited to see what some of these are going to evolve to and what some of these are going to set up for him to be able to into an LP later down the line.
Like,
so what Audio Face is all about, baby.
Yes.
Blueface, baby.
Thank you, Aminé, for making this project. I will be bumping it. I will be banging it. It is a great little thing. And the Limbo Deluxe that we got also in 2020 was a little nice thing as well. I can't believe that was only 2020. Wow. But Aminé is just spoiling us, essentially. And we really love it. We'll have more. Arbitrary Scale, because we do Arbitrary Scales every week on Audio Face, because this is the podcast we do, and the review we said is the review we said. This week is gonna be Kirsten Cinema's Donors, and who went first last time?
You did on this one, last one, so I go on this one. This is a solid Democracy Engine. I don't even know what Democracy Engine is, or I might have heard of it before, but just for the name itself and for how much they gave Kirsten Cinema, it's hilarious.
Sounds sketch to me, but okay.
Like, extreme sketch. Like, what's your PAC money coming from? Democracy Engine? Like, well, not very cash money of you.
Yeah. Or like, using our financial accelerator, democracy engine, we are directly able to, it's like, that's what the democracy engine is, what they pitch to the donors themselves. Like, oh, you want to get involved in politics? Well, why don't you invest in our democracy engine and get the tax cuts you really want? You put your money in the democracy engine. Okay, I'm done. Emily's List is what I'm giving this.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not going to get into that. I'm just going to say they're their top donor. Yep. And I don't get why, because Emily's List is supposed to be representing a lot of what Christian cinema is refusing to do. So I'm going to let that one marry.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm going to say that as well. Right.
Quick hits.
Quick hits before Sean goes on like a 5-hour tangent.
Yes. So speaking of characteristic audio face things, Sufjan Stevens is taking a break.
Yeah, I mean, he released a shit ton of music the past couple of years, so he definitely deserved your break. We've reviewed, probably two of his records the past 2 years, I think, at least.
And
we enjoyed most of them, too.
And four albums, I remember like one of the
albums in 2 years? Holy
yeah, four albums in 2 years is a lot. I remember reviewing one of those albums, and I remember thinking it was like good, but like overwhelming. Like there was a lot. There's so much.
There's a lot of Sufjan Stevens.
It was the Ascension.
Yep.
And there are some really good tracks in there, but it's just like, wow, there's a lot going on in this man's brain, and he needs to just like sort of like, it was an hour and 20 minutes long. He's just sort of like, tamp it down. Have an editor, like have someone work through these pieces the best as possible, or find some way to bring these pieces to life with like a visual medium or something like that. But it's a lot going on here, but at least he realizes that, he needs a break to be able to recharge himself as a musician, and God bless for that.
I don't know how to do this story, but Madonna's, I don't even know how to like nominate her for something. Like, what award do we nominate for this before we get in?
So, it's interesting. In Audioface, we realized this year that we have an award for bigotry in music. We don't have one for ignorance, but we also don't have one for insensitivity.
Or like genuine stupidity, but or like insensitivity is a good one, which we probably have a lot of that, because there was a one Madonna that she literally did a photo shoot somehow, for some God knows why reason, recreating Marilyn Monroe's deathbed.
Oh.
Like prescription bill bottles and all, recreating it. Just like, hey, look at me.
I would almost call this the Before the Bodies Are Even Cold award, but this is way after.
That's after the bodies are buried award.
This is the 9/11 joke rule. Like how long of a period is it between like the tragic event and, you know, time healing all wounds? Can you make jokes about it, right? Like you're finally starting to be able to get like, finally, as I've been chomping at the bit for 9/11 jokes, don't take that the wrong way, but like after 20 years, I think you're starting to see like the combination of like humor and jokes around 9/11 without backlash for people saying too soon. It's like very clearly there's like a time period in which you can do these things, but coming back to
that's
the music
not tasteful,
part of it,
girl.
Yeah, a lot of people like people were not liking it on Twitter, where we find out where people have opinions. But I kind of don't see this. Is this like meant? It's not like a celebration. It's not honoring. It's not even like a "hey, don't do drugs, kids" kind of awareness deal. It's just like a "happy Halloween. I was Marilyn Monroe for like Halloween." And by the way, like it's a Dia de los Muertos thing as well. Like.
Jesus Christ. That's way too fucking morbid, man.
Say what you will about Madonna, ever the ever the genius with fashion. And we end quick hits with Jen Kidd, who's also known as the 6ix9ine impersonator, who has been charged with murdering his wife.
Goddamn.
So Ali Nassar Abu Laban, better known as Jen Kidd on his social media pages, has been arrested as being charged with murdering his wife, Anna, and her friend, Rayburn Barron.
My favorite thing, though, he does impersonations of Tony Montana from Scarface, and randomly various characteristics from the Elder Scrolls franchise. So he's probably playing like a dark elf. Like, you're definitely like, you're definitely Thalmor, my guy, if you're murdering your wife. Jesus. It's just wild that. Too much irony in that.
Following Abulaban's arrest, his cousin Louis Marinari played it for the jury. Now, he spoke to CBS affiliate and explained that Anna's social life, quote, flourished over the last year. I think he became jealous, extremely jealous of that, and extremely furious. He was super jealous that his wife was going out with friends and he wasn't involved and he wanted to control her. He wanted to know what she was doing every time of day.
When he killed, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the old fucking Drake nails, hotline dude. Bling lyric started going less, started wearing less and going out more. No, but really, like, it goes to a serious situation of, like, men are fucking dangerous with their, like, emotions and how they, like, handle it.
They were controlling. They don't know how to say that because they're all worried about every fucking thing they do. And goddamn. Poor girl.
Yeah, it's like, express your feelings and your emotions before you resort to taking someone else's life or drastically ruining someone else's life. It's so weird. But yeah, that is. It seems like anyone around the 6ix9ine bubble or circle
is
like
not
that.
A good person.
Seems a little weird. Nevertheless, we do always like to end Audio Face on a fun note. And what could be a more fun note to end an episode of the Audio Face podcast with a special release from the band Radiohead? So, Sean, take it away.
Right, so we got Kid Amnesia. The entire thing is 34 songs, 2 hours and 5 minutes long. But the reason why is because they combined, it's two albums. You have Kid A and Amnesiac, which came out in the year 2000 and 2001, respectively. And then a third disc, which has all of these unreleased B-sides and different versions of songs that they've never released until this. Coming up on the 20th anniversary of Amnesiac. And it's really cool to hear different versions of songs that I've been listening to my entire life, versions of songs I've never heard of, and songs that we've heard of in concerts and other things here or there, little snippets of, but never gotten full releases of, or how they're supposed to be actually done, actually released. So as we are promptly named Audio Face, you can figure out that's a play on words of Radiohead. You can understand why we were really excited for this. And I'm wearing my like spinning plate shirt right here, so you know.
Wait, stand up again for the audience so I can get you on the one shot. Yeah, there we go. Just feels like spinning plates for those who are seeing. Nice. So yeah, That and also before we get into it, we did a two-part Audio Face episode on Radiohead that dropped this year, I want to say, for our anniversary of the podcast. So definitely make sure you check that out wherever you get podcasts, so you can listen to everything, because we do a proper review of Kid A and Amnesiac, because we're not really going to talk about those parts of the album here.
No.
There's no need to. It's been out for damn near 20 years, and we literally talked about it in that episode, so we encourage you to check it out there. That will be in part one. But yeah, that being said, you do get this. I'm just echoing everything you said here. It's really interesting to see these a time capsule, a moment where you're getting these bits and pieces of work that are now finished 20 years later, but they very much feel like moments of Radiohead's era from Kid A and Amnesiac. And it was a very distinct era, because Radiohead, more than most bands, is very distinct with their eras in making music. They all sound incredibly different. They have a Radiohead sort of style to them, but these all sound very specifically like that turn of the 2000s Radiohead. And like a lot of critics have said, that's the era that really kind of made the band not just
transcend,
like,
into something, but
yeah,
greater.
It's their legacy. It's their legacy era, essentially. Yes. Radiohead was a very popular band before then, but they had identity issues with who they were, and that fame was starting to wane, as it always does when you're that kind of band. And so Kid A and Amnesiac from that era really changed things around, and more in the bonus episode for that.
Exactly. And it prompted them to their legendary status that they are today. But now, actually getting into the music of this, you start the third disc, promptly titled Of Like Spinning Us, but the Why Us version. And it's very cool because you get the Amnesiac version of Like Spinning Plates, which Bam, shout out Bam from We Made a Podcast. This is him and I's favorite joke of we love the Amnesiac's version of Spinning Plates because it's so weird and like... You have the electronic one, and we always like to play that in the middle of random DJ sets just to wash the floor clear and people be like, what in the flying fuck is this? And him and I just wailing about this track. But the cool part of the YS version is it combines the piano you get in the live versions and other versions along with the studio version that you hear in Amnesiac. And you have an extra verse too of YS, Why Not Someone Else, and stuff. And it's very haunting. It's, I think Tom originally wrote the track in the early 90s or in 94, 95 of the Rwanda genocide. And it's now just prompted into pretty much any war that happens, more or less, of Western powers and stuff. And he will play it in concerts and say, I remember there was one in 03, he said, before he played Like Spinning Plates, he goes, oh yeah, this goes out to all of our glorious leaders who are bombing tens of thousands of civilians. And I hope that they can go to sleep with that. And then he plays Like Spinning Plates, and it still holds up today because shit never changes. It's a very good version, though. It's really cool.
Yeah, I liked... That's what I felt a lot of, like, these songs were, you know, almost, like, over... Not, like, overlays, but, like, combining some Kid A-ish things with some Amnesiac things and, like, putting them together and creating, like, a sort of different remix from them, which is not, like, to downgrade in any way. Like, a lot of bands do this. Like, the Gorillaz D-Sides project, a lot of it is just, like, taking existing Demon Days songs and, like, slowing them down or repacing them or doing some sort of, like, different spin with them to seem kind of get an idea of what their headwork was like. But it's definitely, like, something you benefit from most as a previous Radiohead fan, like coming into it already. It's definitely like fan service kind of deal. I liked like Spinning Plates have always kind of been like, you know, like it's a fine Radiohead song. But I was really like the Fog, which is like a super rarity Fog. Radiohead
again, speaking, right? again
yes.
Anything you want, it can be done. How did you go back? Did you go back? Did you go back?
I liked how it sounded kind of like some of the live sessions from King of Limbs, where it's a little bit stripped back, but it's mostly kind of Tom at the piano singing very softly because he's at that point in his voice specifically where you're kind of only getting the soft stuff. And I think it just goes really nicely together. And I think one really nice thing about disc three of these like editions is that more or less they kind of fit into the 2021 trope of having short songs. And so you can actually kind of throw these things in there. It's like, oh yeah, this is a short little indie track from a band I heard recently and to fool all your Zoomer friends into listening to 2000s Radiohead.
Throw him Fog again and get him into listening Comlac 2+2=5, the greatest B-side record ever to be donned by Jesus Christ himself. Anyways, a cool thing too with the disc three is you get Untitled version one in between Spinning Plates and Fog, Untitled version two, Untitled version three. And with these is you can literally hear the sounds that they created to coincide with the tracks. So you can hear the little bits of electronic messing around with that actually were being able to put into tracks. So I love that as someone who's like an audio nerd or whatnot that loves to hear that, something that's deconstructed, because now I can get little bits of it. Like example, Untitled version one, you have this little chime beat that you hear in Polk Revolving Doors, but you can barely hear it because Polk Revolving Doors is like crazy and there's a lot of shit going on in that track. But with there, you can actually get that level deconstructed part of that, and you get that too in like Untitled version two. You get to hear it's like part of like where Morning Bell is and Pyramid Song and some other parts of the little blurbs and stuff. And Untitled three later down the track, it's cool because you hear the harps of motion picture soundtrack of on Kid A, and it's, you get this beautiful thing. I didn't even realize that they have an Ante Martineau in that track going in the background, and then I went back to listening to motion picture soundtrack on Kid A, and I was like, wow, I actually didn't realize that. The whole time listening to it, there is an Ante Martineau a little bit of the back, and you can hear that little part in there. It's just very hard to hear because there's a lot of other stuff going on in the track as well. But again, it's something that as fan service and as somebody who's listened to Kid A a million times, it's really cool to hear that. But then now I don't have to go into the rest of the titles, but now the two full tracks that were completely finished and they never released. First one's If You Say the Word, which we reviewed as our single. Absolutely like classic Kid A, Kid A era Radiohead. Beautiful, gorgeous, love the guitar, drum is really good. Love the way that Tom does the vocals and the way they put the reverb on it, and you can hear it kind of wrap around your head as well. Really, really good track. And again, has Ante Martineau too. Fun. You really get to hear it at the end.
Yes, you're saying that was the first one. What's the second?
My second is Follow Me Around, which I have been waiting for them to release this on since I can remember. They have played, Tom York has played at concerts. Tom and Johnny have played it for concerts. Adams for Peace have played it for concerts. Radiohead have like done it as like warm dress rehearsals, but they've never actually played it much, and they've never released it until now. Finally, they do it. They have a fun music video of a drone flying through to coincide with it too. But it's interesting because it's a completely acoustic track. I was not expecting that because the version I heard with Tom and Johnny, they have like a drum machine going on. Other like Adams for Peace, you have like the 15 drummers that they have with Adams for Peace going on it too. So it's cool to hear originally it's done this way. And then also the vocals are really choppy and they have like string reverb on it and to mess with it. And you can hear that as well. So it's pretty cool to hear that.
Yeah, I was going to say like, it sounds even a little OK Computer-ish to me.
Yeah, it was made, because it was written in OK Computer. Yeah,
that makes more sense. Yeah, I think like you could take a lot of like Radiohead songs from that era and make them acoustic and they sound more like OK Computer, just because the OK Computer, I felt like, was that kind of last hurrah for Radiohead as like a truly rock band and kind of limited as that. Mm-hmm. So I think of a lot of like the guitar acoustic things is there. And then everything afterwards is guitar is a supplemental instrument to all of the other weird computer things that we're doing with sound. But yeah, I thought it was a really, again, like it's sort of hard to really speak to the usual things we talk to in audio face with albums, like cohesion and structure and then a disc of bonus tracks. Like it's just not going to make sense for this. But nevertheless, I am loving everything that is like on here. And
you have the cursed track that is Polk Pole, the True Love Waits version. Might be the weirdest, absolute strangest Radiohead track I've ever listened to in my entire life. Hands down. Polk Pole, Revolving Doors is already a weird ass track as is on Amnesiac. I love it. I remember walking home from school before and my dad listening to it full blast in the garage and as a kid. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And he's just over there chilling and blasting Polk Pole, Revolving Doors like this on the computer. I'm like, I'm with it. But they put True Love Waits, like this whole breakup song, into it with the vocals all messed up too, so it makes Tom York even sound way more on antidepressants, so he's like 30 times more depressed than he already is, on top of the Pole Revolving Doors beat. It's so weird.
Basically, this is your chance to listen to Radiohead Chopped and Screwed.
Literally, yeah, it is hilarious. Like, I remember the first time because I stayed up late when they released it. I was out, you got Follow Me Around, cool. I was like, Polk Pole, True Love Waits version. I'm like, oh, maybe that was like a session or something. No, literally put True Love Waits in the middle of Polk Pole or Revolving Doors. I go, this is okay. Thank you for not making this into an album. It's the song I'm going to say. I don't know if I don't like it, which is rare for me to say. It's just odd. Super odd. But the Polk Pole beat goes hard, though.
Yeah, it always will. And stands the test of time, pretty much.
Like, already talked about on Title 2. Morning Bell in the dark version, there's already two Morning Bell versions on Kid A and Amnesiac, and they're very different. This one is more of the Amnesiac version of Morning Bell, where you can kind of hear the chimes and stuff in the background and the really like sad horns is what I would call them, more or less. It's very haunting, almost like Halloweenish vibes within there. But again, it's cool to hear how many times they recorded like Morning Bell and the way they wanted to actually make it into a track. Again, with Fog, they did like four different versions of Fog. So it's cool to hear different ideas that they've had and be like, oh, this didn't stick, but this is a version that we did, but we didn't necessarily like, or maybe it wouldn't have fit, but here it is. Cool to hear that.
Yeah, it's always interesting to imagine what could have been if like they decided to stick with a different train of thoughts of a train of ideas with a song, and it totally just changes the whole like mix of it. It could have been, it almost just changes, especially with a band like Radiohead. It sort of changes the genre of how the song could have been.
Exactly.
Yeah.
100%. Because yeah, you could go like Morning Bell, Kid A is almost like a normal-ish rock song with like a muted electronic keyboard and pretty fast drums, and Amnesiac, it's this totally different thing. In this version, you can kind of hear that idea of transitioning into the other version of Morning Bell too. Then within the last four tracks of it, you get all of these ambient sounds of the layering that they did to create sounds, to create the tracks, I should say. Example, Pyramid Song in Amnesiac. You have Pyramid Strings, which is the string arrangement that Johnny wrote for Pyramid Song. And you can hear him bowing the guitar, which he does live. We have watched that song live in Berkeley together with Johnny bowing the guitar, and it's really cool to hear that. But this is where you actually get to hear it in there, because in the normal recorded track, it's very hard to listen to it. And you can tell the way that they put that on top of Tom's vocal with the piano. It's really cool. Next one after that, you have Alternate Fast Track, which is, shit, what song is this on now? Amnesiac, I can't think of it. But anyways, I think maybe Dollars and Cents or something on Amnesiac. But it's cool to hear like the way, like it's the first half of it is like the really fast rock track, and then it gets into the harp going into it to Entitled 3, which then I already talked about too. Again, you can hear like the layers and how they wrote everything and layered it on top of it, which is very difficult to do. And the last one that they have is How Does It Appear Into Streams? Which is the deconstructed strains of How to Disappear Completely. But what they scrapped from How to Disappear Completely, the track, was the On to Martineau intro. So in the live versions that they play, Johnny usually does like a minute and a half, minute long On to Martineau layering that he does. He loops it, and that goes throughout the whole track. And I always wondered if he just wrote it, oh, just to do it for live shows or something, just to kind of make it different. No, that's how they originally had written the song. I was reading up on it, and Johnny tweeted a picture of his handwritten notes of How to Disappear and the string arrangement that he did and his handwritten sheet music on there. And he said that originally it was supposed to be that, but they said that it didn't fit in Kid A because the issue of how they wanted to put How to Disappear, they wanted to put How to Disappear after the national anthem. And they said if they had that little extra On Martineau interlude, he said it would have thrown it off because of how fast-paced the national anthem is. So they had to cut that part as much as they wanted, as much as Johnny really wanted to keep it. So these are the string arrangements and how it's originally supposed to sound, which I literally was in tears when I heard this because I've never heard that part and I never knew that they actually wrote it for Kid A. And I think it would have changed the album a bit too if they had actually put that part. And then once the strings come in, That's where the song normally starts with Kid A, and you get the guitar and everything. And it's haunting, it's beautiful, it's gorgeous, it's a very emotional track.
Yeah. Even the way that it sort of like ends with like the strings being the center of the instrument. I mean, the center of with the strings being the central instrument of the song. It really evokes this strong emotional element to it that Radiohead's really just able to do and deliver in a lot of ways. And yeah, the way you're saying how the songs get deconstructed and rethought of and like really meticulously crafted, like you're looking at the guts of how really smart people make albums and make music like this. We encourage yeah. other artists to take notes of being how thoughtful you are in this, because we've been doing this podcast long enough and many artists are not being this thoughtful. Many are, and we do appreciate them, and we call out when we see it, and it's very clear, as we have. But a lot aren't, and this is just sort of like the playbook and the example to do it. I think that's good. Exactly. I don't, do you want to give this an arbitrary scale ranking?
I mean, no, you don't have to do an arbitrary scale. Also, they don't. The Kristen Cinema's donor list don't deserve Radiohead. Damn it.
And on that, what does it mean to play us out?
What does it mean to play us out? Thank you for listening to Audio Face. This is just a show about morals and characteristics of morals. Anyways, you can find us at Audio Face Pod on all social medias platforms. You could follow the show at audioface.show or whatever you get your podcasts from. You could go to youtube.com/audiofacepod, where we post daily clips, more or less. Comment in there what you think. Interact with us. We comment a lot, and
just go in there if you listen to the podcast. Just go in there and just like load up all the videos. Just like every single one. That'll help us a lot.
Why the fuck not?
I'm kidding, but I'm like not kidding. Like, do it. Go ahead and pull over in your car.
Thank you for helping out the algorithm. So listen to Kanye that little bit. You know, follow me SW Suarez if I trust you, and you can everything. And you can follow Dan at Dan from the internet on Instagram, Dan from the web on Twitter if he trusts you or not. This has been Audio Face 210. Thank you for letting me rant on about Radiohead for like 20 minutes. So.
That's the podcast. Peace. Cheers.